Good afternoon. This is Dr. David back with the Fresh Start with Dr. David podcast. I'm really, really excited about today's episode. I hope everybody has been doing well. I know it's allergy season and, you know, outside in a lot of parts of the country, it looks like, you know, somebody's trying to follow the yellow brick road. I know in Georgia, it looks like that. There's white dust everywhere. And I know my allergies have been killing me. I'm probably going to do an episode about allergies and just kind of some things to keep in mind as you address and deal with allergens out there, and just some things, especially when it comes to medication management and taking over-the-counter agents. So I will do a podcast about that coming soon. As you know, I've also said that I'm going to do a podcast about GI conditions and skin conditions. So that's upcoming. I'm going to do a podcast because there's so many drugs out there to, you know, deal with diabetes as well as weight loss, and they're being used interchangeably. Some of those drugs you're probably familiar with, like Wegovy and Mounjaro, et cetera. And then also be talking about some of the drugs that are used to treat skin conditions. And it's not by accident that there seems to be a rise in GI conditions and weight-oriented conditions, and also a rise in skin conditions. And in some ways, they have the same root. So I'll be doing an upcoming episode about both of those topics that should be really, really informative. If you haven't done so already, make sure that you tune into the most recent episode that I did with yoga virtuoso and expert, Miss Fiji McAlpine. It's really, really gotten a lot of feedback so far. A lot of people are interested in yoga. And if anxiety or imbalance between work and personal life is an issue, then you should definitely check it out. Not only that, but Fiji also gave 6 months of free yoga access to all of our listeners. So everybody gets that. So all you have to do is check out the episode and there'll be information in there. You can also check out my Facebook page and the link will be there for the free 6 months of yoga. So that's a rare thing. It's a huge treat. You get to try out yoga from the comforts of your home for free. You can even get a group of friends together and do it for free. It's a treat. And, you know, you have no obligations. So definitely check out that episode. We need more modalities like yoga that help bridge the gap between the mind and the body in a holistic and natural way. So definitely check out that episode. And without further ado, we're going to jump into today's episode. So today's episode, even though a lot of the focus might be on physician and healthcare professional compensation, these concepts by today's expert, who's a visionary in terms of compensation, specifically with physicians, but it's my argument that it could be applied to a lot of other fields too. But he is going to present some great concepts and ideas that you can use in your own life in order to magnify your income and revenue and your value in the workplace. Each one of us brings things, skill sets, experience, professionalism, knowledge, wisdom to our careers. Hopefully we do. And hopefully we grow in that wisdom as our career spans. But it's definitely been the case that in many professions, in many realms, in industries and sectors, workers are not fairly compensated for their labor. And I know in my case, I discovered that right before I graduated from medical school, and I looked at the number of hours that residents had to make and what their compensation was. And I divided those two numbers and came up with something like $2 to $5 an hour. And I was like, are you serious? But, you know, it is what it is. So without further ado, I'd like to invite or welcome our special guest, Mr. Ethan Encana. Welcome, Ethan.
You had me at free yoga for 6 months. What?
Yeah,
that's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
Wow. I am delighted to be here with you, Dr. David. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And you definitely should check out that episode. And, you know, introduce it to your own clients. It's free. So I believe, and I use this concept and belief even with my practices. I believe that everything that people need is out there. You just have to search and be diligent and perseverant and persistent about it. So I really do believe that, whether it's becoming a doctor or an attorney or any of those kind of things. And so I'm so happy to have you here today. If you wouldn't mind, I'd like to share a little bit about you, if that's okay.
Yeah, let's do it. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So Ethan Nkana, and his last name starts with the letter N and is N-K-A-N-A. So I had to make sure that I was pronouncing it correctly. And it's actually rather easy. It flows off the tongue. But Ethan Nkana is the visionary behind Rocky Mountain Physician Agency, or RMPA. And what he does is he helps medical professionals negotiate their contracts and get paid more fairly, regardless of their race, gender, or other factors. And so in this case, amid the COVID-19 chaos, he realized that a lot of physicians are dealing with unfair negotiations, one-sided negotiations, unfair contracts, crazy work hours, and frankly, physician burnout and exhaustion. And so he wanted to create something to help physicians get treated fairly, just like everybody wants to get treated fairly. In Ethan's case, he was previously a hospital executive. And during his time as a hospital executive, he was exposed to some of the variables that have led to this problem, including the concept that in a lot of cases, physicians who are employed by hospitals bring in a revenue of $1 million a year. And a lot of those physicians, their take-home salary is not $1 million. In fact, generally speaking, it's a lot less than that. But a lot of these physicians generate $1 million a year in revenue. And obviously, he saw the discrepancy between the revenue that they bring in and what they're being compensated. So he wanted to help fix that, which I applaud. And I think that's great. And, you know, the first thing I think that popped in my mind is that, hey, what can other people in other fields do to make sure that they're getting treated equitably and fairly? In Ethan's case, he brings over 15 years of leadership experience in hospital finance, hospital operations, healthcare strategy, and physician contracting. And he's got one of the largest firms in the nation that helps doctors and other professionals get fairly compensated. And so those are some of the things that he does. He helps medical professionals, including physicians, to get more compensation, to maximize their time, to make sure that they get fair contracts and fair compensation, including time off, which magnifies to better care for everybody. So the thing about it, it's all connected. The better your medical provider or your professional at the hospital or at a doctor's practice, the better that they're doing, the more balanced they are, the better care that they're going to give to you. And I think, you know, that makes a huge difference. And in Ethan's case, he also comes highly credentialed because he has a doctorate in law and an MBA. So without further ado, again, welcome, Ethan.
Thank you for having me, Dr. David. I am excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to, as much as I can, kind of let you kind of lead this conversation and kind of where it goes. So how about you start off by telling us a little bit about how your journey led to what you do now? I know I read a little bit about it, but I'm guessing that maybe there's some other things that are associated with that journey that you might want to share.
Yeah, that was a really helpful and I think comprehensive background. The little bit of color I might add is that my mom is a doctor.
Right.
And so I grew up seeing doctors as through her lens as heroes who save people's lives.
Right.
And when I was in high school and college thinking about what I wanted to do for my career, my mom said, get into healthcare and you'll always have a job. So that's where I started my career as an intern in HR at a hospital in California, and then meandered across the country over the last 15 years, growing in areas of hospital finance, in strategy, and most importantly for what I do now, physician contracting and compensation. And now I get to use all of the insider knowledge I picked up on that side of the table to help negotiate fair contracts for doctors.
Nice. Yeah, no, that is awesome. And you know, one of the things that really, really impressed me is that you were able to apply what you learned in one realm to another realm, which is a great skill to have regardless of what you do for a living. I have a lot of clients, you know, as you know, have several practices, you know, and two of my practices are kind of focused on mental health. MLC of Greater Atlanta is a holistic mental health and wellness practice with a focus on people who, you know, may or may not have a diagnosis, but they have psychiatric symptoms like anxiety, depression, ADD, problems with focus, attention, life direction, relationship issues, things like that. And then I have another practice, Atlanta Coaching and Hypnotherapy Associates, which is focused on life coaching for anyone, whether they have mental health issues or not, hypnosis and hypnotherapy to help get people motivated and get past some of the self-limiting beliefs that they might have about themselves and their circumstances, and then also kind of self-improvement, self-development, and those kind of things. And one of the reasons why I have those two practices is because, you know, there's still a stigma attached to mental health. But you know, the funny thing is I use some of the same tools in both practices. So you can take things from one field and apply them to another field. And when you do that, it can just multiply the effect. Now, in terms of you, you know, from what I read, that you started Rocky Mountain Physician Agency around 2019 during the pandemic. Are there any specific things that you recall or that you remember associated with the pandemic that led to you starting your company then?
I was at a point in life and with building this idea around doctors having talent agents like movie stars and athletes. And it got to a point where there was enough interest in the business and how we help doctors that I could no longer sustain my day job and what I was building. And my wife and I, she was my girlfriend at the time. My wife and I talked about my runway, which at the time was 6 months. And so in July of 2020, I officially launched the RMPA brand. And within 6 months, we were able to generate some revenue, which was phenomenal. But there was a period of uncertainty during the pandemic where I didn't know if this was going to actually gain traction. And the moment that it crystallized was when a spine surgeon called me and told me he was making $0 because his hospital's OR had been shut down for elective surgeries.
No, wow.
And that story, that interaction told me there is a need for doctors to have someone looking out for them, not just in terms of fair pay, but also a schedule that fits your lifestyle, clinical support that allows you to practice at the top of your license. All of these things that are very reasonable and support you providing the best care to your patients.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about it is it used to be the case, to your mother's credit, it used to be the case that being a physician or being a healthcare professional was kind of like, you know, you could count on it being sustainable, successful, things like that. And one of the things that I've noticed over recent years is that's all being shaken up. And now that, you know, as I recently read, one healthcare facility has replaced all of the nurses with robots. And now we have AI and we've got, you know, IBM Watson that can outdiagnose a physician. And, you know, we've got all these things going on. The ground isn't as secure and stable as it used to be. So that's why I think it's so important that people negotiate their value and their worth. And I think it changes how you feel. I think internally, it really does a number to your self-esteem if you work really, really hard and you feel like you're not being compensated fairly. So I, you know, and I have a lot of clients like that. And one of the things that I try to do with them is help them to branch out and start their own brands and start their own companies and start their own organizations, so they're in charge of their destiny versus their employer. And that kind of brings me to, you know, one of the realizations that I had during, you know, medical school or near the end of medical school, you know, when medical school students are about to graduate and they start thinking about residency and things like that, and you think about the compensation. And I know when I graduated from medical school in 2010, I believe the average compensation for a resident was about $55,000. And I was just like, oh, well, you know, that's not bad. In my case, it wasn't great either because, you know, prior to medical school, I worked in banking and I made a lot more money than that. I took a huge risk leaving banking as an executive and going into medicine, which was, you know, what is something I was more passionate about. I mean, I was really kind of bored in banking, even though I did really well financially. But, you know, when I started looking at the compensation and then I started thinking about, well, how many hours and talking to friends and specifically friends who had already begun residency or finished residency about what residents were paid and how many hours they worked. You know, I was amiffed because I was just like, okay, well, if I'm going to make 55 grand a year, you know, that comes to, you know, I don't know, $5,000 a month or whatever, and I'm going to work 80 hours a week, that's 320 hours a month, and divide that by $5,000. I was like, oh my God, that's nothing. That's like working worse than working at McDonald's. And when I was introduced to you about having you as a guest on the podcast as an expert, you know, one of the things that I noticed was what you said about how some physicians contribute over $1 million a year to a hospital and don't get paid nearly that.
And that's on the light side of things. As you get higher on the acuity level and start to get into some of the subspecializations amongst surgeons,
right,
those numbers can double and triple.
Wow.
The reason I know this is because when I worked in hospitals, one of my jobs was to, and just to be clear, I only worked in nonprofit, faith-based hospitals.
Okay.
So sometimes people say, well, my hospital's community hospital. They're all looking at this the same way.
Right.
I could tell you down to the dollar how much revenue Dr. David makes us in a given year. And then what I'll do is say, well, we're having a tough budget, so I need you to be busier, Dr. David. I need you to see more patients. I need I need you to have shorter visit times.
Right.
I need to see patients faster.
Right.
How does that contribute to patient outcomes? How does that contribute to patient satisfaction?
Right. Right. Or physician morale, for that matter.
Or physician morale. That is the the
burnout, exhaustion.
Exactly. The snowball rolls down the hill.
Yeah.
And ultimately, patients pay the price.
Yeah.
Because I think we all know happy doctors equals happy patients.
True. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I know in my case with some of my friends who are surgeons, they do that. They negotiate their contracts and things like that. And, you know, maybe they would benefit from a conversation with you because a lot of them do locums work, which I'm sure you're familiar with, locum tenens work. And, you know, they negotiate things, but the revenue that they received before they started or learned how to negotiate those things was vastly different. In some cases, I know at least one of them doubled her income when she started negotiating. And my guess is that she talked to somebody like you.
Exactly.
One of the things that I read, and obviously this statistic or the statistics that formed, you know, this outcome don't really surprise me, but, you know, one of the things that I did notice too is, you know, one of your aims is to help, you know, physicians of color and female physicians to get their fair share. Tell us a little bit about kind of what you experienced in terms of that, in terms of disparities and compensation among some groups.
When I started my mom actually pointed it out and said, Ethan, you need to pay special attention to women physicians.
Okay.
And admittedly, I didn't think there would be anything to write home about, but the data bears it out. Medscape, Merritt Hawkins, these organizations that publish annual physician compensation surveys
right.
show in black and white that women physicians earn less than their counterparts,
right?
As do physicians of color.
Right.
And so when I do education for doctors, whether it's residency, fellowship, or physician associations, I often emphasize for everyone in the room, but especially if you're in a vulnerable community, it amplifies the need for you to stand up and say, hey, I think the market for my skill set is this. I'm hoping you can help close the gap. So I never have doctors go in and demand things because they feel or believe they're marginalized. That's not an effective strategy in my experience.
Right.
No. But what I do for every doctor is make sure that you know what the market rate is for your skill set, training, and expertise. And then we'll go from there on figuring out how do we create a competitive compensation package for you.
Now, in terms of some of the groups that you've spoken to, I'm just curious because I'm a member of the Morehouse School of Medicine Community Physicians Network, or CPN. Have you spoken to CPN or the physicians at Morehouse School of Medicine?
I would love to speak to the physicians at Morehouse.
Maybe that's something that we need to make happen.
Great idea.
Yeah, we need to make that happen. So no, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I used to be on the board of the Atlanta Medical Association, but I am currently a member of the Community Physicians Network of Morehouse School of Medicine. So I would love to get you in contact with them so maybe you could speak to everybody in the group about that. And as you may or may not know, you know, there are a host of different minorities and a significant number of women in the organization. And it mirrors kind of healthcare today. I know I was born in 1973. And if in 1973, if you looked at the percentage of physicians and surgeons that were female, it may have been, I don't know, 10%. But just like in terms of JDs, attorneys, that number has drastically changed. And I'm sure you've seen that too. I mean, it seems like at least half or even more physicians these days are female.
You're certainly seeing the trend that is being relayed in the data. Unfortunately, the challenge is the compensation numbers haven't changed along with those ratios of proportions of women representation or minority representation. So just as a really kind of obvious example, low-hanging fruit, OBGYNs, 75%, 3 out of 4 OBGYNs are women, yet women are still lower paid even within that specialty.
Right. Yeah. And I know in the course of the master's degrees that I did, where I had to look at HR issues about disparities in compensation, I remember one of my textbooks that actually talked about one of the key variables that they said made a big difference is, I can't believe that I still remember this, but I do because it stuck out, was that one of the reasons supposedly why is just women and a lot of minorities, regardless of the profession, didn't realize that they could barter and negotiate on their compensation. And so they would just take whatever was given to them, whereas other groups would go in with a strategy for negotiating before the interview even took place.
There you go. And that's just one of a number of reasons that the research shows that people don't speak up and say, hey, I know that I've earned more than this. It's difficult for anyone. It's an uncomfortable situation. And so I often tell doctors it takes courage to stand up for yourself and say, here's what I've earned. And I think doctors find it easier to tap into that courage when they understand that they're really advocating for your patients. When can show up as your best self, Dr. David, your patients benefit tremendously.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. That is 100% true. And it doesn't help anybody when physicians feel like they have to work an inordinate number of hours to pay off their student loans and things like that. And they're burnt out and exhausted and they have to leave. They want to leave medicine or they have to take time off and things like that. And then they can't be available to their patients, as you've just alluded. It's not a good situation for anybody to have an employee, a physician nonetheless, but any employee being burned out. I know a lot of times with my own clients, and I can say this almost with 100%, every single person who comes to me, regardless of the reason why they come to me, I urge them to start their own small business. Regardless of, it doesn't matter what they do for a living, whether they're a pro athlete or whether they're a movie industry professional, or if they're a doctor or an attorney or a janitor or a plumber or a truck driver. Every single one of them, I advocate that they do that. And I do it based off this very, very simple premise. If you work for someone else and your position continues or renews to the next year, it's because you generated more revenue from the company than they're paying you. Because if that weren't true, they'd have to let you go. And so the premise is that you're always generating more money than your employer is paying you. And if you have an idea of what that number is, you know, like you've done, then you're better able to negotiate for yourself and advocate for your full due revenue, because you know how much you're actually generating. And I think in a lot of cases, people really have no clue of what revenue they're generating for the company that they work for.
You're completely correct. And any good executive in a hospital would never share that information with the doctor.
Right.
So here's the shortcut.
Right.
Talk to your partners about your pay.
Right.
Talk to your partners about your salary, and I guarantee you somebody in the room is going to say, hey, wait a second, that's not fair.
Right. Right. If everybody's being honest, absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, this is one of the things that really kind of excited me, because, you know, even though I'm an MD, you know, we all know that MDs make up a small part of medicine. You know, you've got nurses and you've got physical therapists, you've got, I could just go on infinitum about all the different, you know, ancillary professionals who work in healthcare. Can some of these, and you know, I know that, you know, my office in Decatur is directly across the street from Emory DeKalb Medical Center, and they've got signs up all over the place, you know, in this little enclave of medical practices and medical buildings, that, you know, nurses signing on bonus and nursing this and, you know, all these kind of things. Can some of these principles that you use to help physicians get compensated fairly, can they be applied to other healthcare professionals?
Absolutely. Every professional should be employing some of these strategies when it comes to assessing what your value is, because you said it perfectly. You're always generating more money for your employer than they're paying you, or else you couldn't run a business.
Right.
And so how then can you as an employee help ensure that on an ongoing basis, you're paid fairly for your contribution to the employer's revenue generation? So the two strategies that I give doctors that I think apply to any profession in terms of how to tap into this power, mm-hmm. One, you must have multiple offers.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot go into a negotiation with an employer with one offer and hoping that they're going to be nice.
Right.
You will have a bad time. So anytime you go into a contract discussion, you must have a competing offer.
Okay.
For example, when I was a hospital executive, when I came out of law school, my salary as a finance person was $72,000. I worked at one employer for 6 years. And when I left that employer in 6 years, my salary was $140,000.
Oh, wow.
Because it went up by 100% because right. At regular intervals, I came back to my employer and said, I believe I'm ready for a promotion and or more money. And spoiler alert, they always said no.
Right.
But guess what? I always had an offer.
Right.
Well, just so you know, I've been offered exactly what you say I'm not ready for
right.
By a competitor.
Right.
And now the conversation shifts.
Right.
What can we do to keep you, Dr. David? What adjustments, monetary, non-monetary, schedule,
right.
Can we do to keep you?
Right.
And the second thing so first you must have multiple offers. The second thing is you must be willing to go to grow. So if you can bring in, you can have all the offers you want, but if you're, if I always ask doctors this when we first talk, they tell me, Ethan, I'm frustrated. I'm having to see patients way faster than is safe. My pay has been cut. My support has been completely decimated. Patients can't get in for weeks, if not months. And I ask these doctors, all right, Dr. Smith, let's say you go to your employer and you ask them, I would like modest adjustments to these things to help me provide patient care. And they say no to everything. What are you going to do?
Right.
If the doctor says, well, I guess I'll just stay and have a better attitude, we can't help you. Right. We're not for you.
Right.
But when a doctor says, Ethan, my patients deserve a better version of me.
Mm-hmm.
My patients deserve the version of me that has adequate time to talk with them about what's going on. My patients appreciate when they can come in to see me within a reasonable time frame. Doctors never talk with me about wanting to make more money.
Right.
That's a nice benefit of working together, but that's not what they come to me about.
Right.
They come to me because they know that their tank in order to care for their patients is being depleted.
Mm-hmm.
And their patient, your patients pay for that.
Yeah. No, absolutely. No, it makes a big difference because at the end of the day, even though work is important, you've got to have personal life and you've got to have some peace of mind. You've got to have a balance. You've got to have playtime. And, you know, it's funny because one of the, I did a long episode about the concept of time. I spent an hour talking about time and the concept of time and how time works, because I have a lot of people who come to me because they procrastinate. They have ADD symptoms. They can't focus. They can't concentrate. Time flies. They don't meet obligations. They always run out of time. They're frequently late, unprepared, things like that. And so I decided to do an episode about it. But when I learned so much in preparation for the episode, when I was thinking about all the different ways that I was talking about time, but one of the things that I kind of came to or realized was that a lot of people who make the most amount of money have the least amount of time, and vice versa. A lot of people who have the most amount of time make the least amount of money. And if you can bridge that gap, especially you're one of the people who has makes a lot of money, but doesn't have a lot of time, it's going to make a big difference in how you feel. And then just kind of how you show up at work and at home, it's just going to multiply in every dimension of your life.
I completely agree. And that's where I often talk with doctors about the fact that you got into medicine to help people.
Right.
And there should not be tension between your ability to make an adequate living and wanting to help people.
Right.
And so I often try to destigmatize the idea that if you're happy, whole, and healthy, guess who sees that? Your patients, yep. Your family, the people that you care about how you show up.
Right.
You care most about how you show up. So that's who I work for, is I work for the people that you all care for. Because if you can show up as your best self, they benefit from that.
So two important concepts that I kind of got that you just kind of chronicled were, number one, the concept of having bargaining power, which is where you have multiple offers. The other one, the second one, was your willingness to leave the relationship. And I think both of those are very, very important. You know, number one, it's good to have options. Options allow you to bargain. And then the other thing is, one of those options is the option to leave. But it's like playing cards. You have to be willing to do it too. And if you're not willing, you know, it's going to be pretty clear pretty quickly. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes people may or may not have multiple offers on the table. But, you know, I always tell my clients who get laid off or who are looking for a job or things like that, is you always have options. If you work full time, you have options. You have a skill set. You have a company that you can start, because like we said earlier, if your employer is keeping you around, it's only because you're bringing in more revenue than they're paying you and they're profiting from that. So an option is creating your own entity. But in terms of like the willingness to leave, one of the things that I've kind of noticed in a lot of cases, although there are people who are willing to leave. And, you know, generally speaking, during certain times or cycles, they do. But one of the things that I've kind of found is in a lot of cases, it takes like a huge, huge, huge amount of variables and energy for some people to leave. People get comfortable. They know the environment, especially in terms of where you live and things like that. And so one of the things that I've kind of found, which is a barrier that I try to help people to get past, is a lot of them aren't really willing to leave because they just don't. They feel like they'll have to pick up again. Is that a hard barrier for you to overcome?
100%. Change is incredibly hard for anyone. And so when I talk with doctors about having these contract discussions, I often say, you don't need to leave your employer to be paid what you're worth. You need to be willing to leave your employer.
Right.
And that distinction is a fine one,
right,
but it's an important one.
Right.
Because if a doctor, I often tell my clients, or even doctors who call me and ask for advice, I tell them, I sat on the other side of the table in those discussions from you. And I'm telling you, from experience, if you come in without a soft landing spot, I'm not going to take you seriously.
Right.
I don't care what specialty you are. I don't care how long you've been here. If you are not actively threatening my pocket as a hospital executive, I'm just not motivated to take you seriously. And unfortunately, the altruism that tends to draw doctors to medicine,
right,
isn't the same motivation that tends to draw hospital executives.
Absolutely.
To medicine.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. No, that's absolutely one. And that's kind of an insight that I had maybe a decade or a couple of decades ago. And I believe if I have the time period correctly, I think it was somewhere around 2000 and gosh, I'm trying to remember, was this when I was in college or if it was when I was in medical school? But basically, you know, there are laws regarding physicians going on strike, against physicians going on strike and things like that. And I remember there was kind of like a healthcare crisis. It was either in the mid to late 90s or it was in the early 2000s. And basically these physicians, and I believe it was California actually, weren't necessarily going on strike, but they were, you know, having like protests and things like that. They were basically letting it be known. And I believe after that happened, Congress came up with some new laws regarding how residents get treated and how interns get treated and things like that. But, you know, I think it was around that time that, you know, I kind of thought about, you know, the kind of concept of, you know, who's running healthcare. I know one of the first episodes that I did, and it's one of the reasons why I started the podcast in the first place, was that, you know, over the last, probably since the 50s and 60s, since managed care has come around, physicians are no longer, and haven't been for a long time, in charge of healthcare. Physicians used to be in charge of healthcare, but they're not anymore. It's generally insurance companies and, in my opinion, pharmaceutical companies and large healthcare organizations or HCOs. But physicians kind of lost control of healthcare a long time ago. And I think that's the problem. When you look at any business, and you know, as you know, a lot of businesses kind of function like an organism. That's where the word organization comes from. A business is an organization. It's an organism. And if the premise of the inception of that organization is let's make as much money as possible versus something altruistic like helping people or healing or decreasing disease, you're going to get totally different outcomes. And it's always been my premise that when you start out with a chief motive of just making money, that somebody's going to get treated unfairly. In terms of the work that you do, could the same principles that guide you helping physicians and physician organizations gain pay equity and fair compensation, could those be applied to other areas in healthcare like nurses?
Absolutely. And nurses have been, I think, a shining example for how to create that power in numbers through a union.
Right.
I don't think doctors are anywhere near that conclusion, but I think the point that would stand for any profession in healthcare is you're stronger when you lock arms with the people next to you.
Right.
When doctors in a practice lock arms with one another and say, one, we're going to talk about our salaries openly with one another. And two, when we find out how differently we're paid and unfair it is, we're going to have a conversation with the employer about it. Now the employer has to take you seriously because there's power in numbers. Now that may not be as applicable in, you know, where you and I came from on the business side or potentially on the legal side, but for those who work as healthcare professionals, pharmacists, CRNAs, nurse practitioners, PAs, lock arms, join forces with your partners and talk about the things that inhibit you from providing the best care to patients. Because ultimately, if you are willing to say our patients deserve better, that's where change happens.
Why do you think that physicians, do you think that complacency or just kind of career fatigue is the reason why physicians haven't done some of the same things that nurses have done in terms of collective bargaining and, you know, unionization and things like that? What do you think the missing variable is?
Pain. I think pain is an incredible motivator.
Right.
And nurses' compensation relative to the working conditions created just enough pain for them to say, this is untenable and unsustainable.
Nah, discomfort.
I think you're exactly right. I think doctors are still just enough in that position of comfort and prestige where they say, yeah, it's worth it for me to, you know, not feel like I have a voice for my patients because I love my partner, or it's worth it to me to be underpaid relative to other doctors in this practice, because if I left, I would have to find a whole new panel of patients to take care of.
Right.
There is a saying I use, inertia rules the day.
Yeah, true.
And maybe more a compassionate way to say that is change is really hard.
Yeah.
Change is incredibly difficult.
Right.
And so when I talk with doctors about how you get what you need for your patients in these conversations, I never couch it in terms of you need to go in order for you to accomplish this. But if you are thinking that your employer is going to take you seriously because you're really passionate and you're a really good doctor, I've got news for you.
Right. Yeah. You're a number.
And frankly, I was the one counting those beans.
Wow.
I could tell you exactly how much those doctors make. And then consequently, knowing how. So, for example, if my CEO would say, Ethan, we found this amazing gynecologic oncologist. I need you to run the numbers on what we will make as a hospital if we recruit him.
Mm-hmm.
The inputs that I care about are, how busy is the doctor going to be? What procedures are they doing? That's the revenue side.
Right.
Then the balance to that is, how much am I paying you?
Right.
I don't have to do the math for your audience because they're extremely educated, but the lower I pay you, the more I make.
Right.
That's just the economics of hospitals.
Yeah.
Like you said, I have to have my expenses lower than my revenue to make a business and continue to stay in business. What I'm asking doctors to do and challenging doctors to do is to say, you don't have to make $1 million. That's not what we're asking for. But we're asking for you to be paid fairly for the position that you've earned and your contribution to the organization. That is not at all in tension with your Hippocratic oath to do no harm.
True. True. You know, one of the insights that I had when I decided to start, I guess maybe I was a little idealistic about some things, but, you know, real life and experience has a way of showing you things written in books don't. But one of the things that I realized is when I first started my practice in 2016, and it's still very much the case now, is most people who present for help with a life issue, with a mental health issue, it's because, you know, the ish has hit the fan. Something has happened that's just like a huge alarm bell, like, I can't do this. And it's not a light kind of reminder or like, oh, gee, you know, insight, maybe I should do this. Maybe I should improve. Maybe I should sleep better. Maybe I should change my diet. Maybe I should do these things to make sure that I'm motivated on a regular basis. It's usually something really, really tough that happens, a life-changing event. And that was a real kind of enigmatic moment for me when I realized most of my clients aren't coming to me because they're just like, oh, wow, you know, Dr. Wright, Dr. David, I want to improve my life. I want to be the best version of me. I want to be more successful. I want to be more resourceful. Yeah, sometimes I have some clients like that, but usually it's a major life event. Something has happened to them. In some cases, it's something that happened publicly. In some cases, it's career-wise or it's personal. So usually some big thing has happened and the person really can't go on and function the same way. And generally speaking, they've already been kind of diminishing or impaired in functioning by the time they come out to me. But you're very much right. It usually isn't a situation where people just like, oh, wow, I need to improve. It's usually something that happens and it's a wake-up call. But it's also an opportunity, because every wake-up call is also an opportunity. It's also an opportunity to go beyond your comfort zones, grow as a person, and become more resilient. And it sounds like those are some of the things that you're helping your clients do by empowering them to realize their full value and worth.
It resonated with me when you said that people are already in a bad spot by the time they get to you. Mm-hmm. I had a doctor call me about a month ago, and her salary was cut in half.
Oh, wow.
And I asked, well, how would that even mathematically happen? Legally, how would that happen? So she explained to me that the employer had asked her to change her contract, cutting her base salary, and what they would do is add in volume compensation.
Right. Yep.
Well, that volume compensation never materialized.
Of course.
And so the doctor is now making half of what she was making before. Actually, she was making half of what she was making as a rookie coming out of training. That was her first contract.
Wow.
And when this doctor called me, my heart just broke.
Yeah.
Because while I'm having, to your point, while I'm having this conversation with this individual doctor, mm-hmm. I know there are so many other doctors who are suffering and not saying a word.
Absolutely. Suffering in silence.
Mm.
Suffering in silence. Yeah. No, that's true. So I want to get to a couple of things, or at least a couple of different big things that I want to cover. So number one, I want to ask you for some specifics about, you know, things that I have a lot of audience members or a lot of listeners and subscribers who are nurses. I have, you know, a lot of physicians too, but also nurses. So I would like kind of your big theme thinking on what nurses can do in terms of bargaining and things like that. Although you've covered a lot of them, is number one, having other options and offers on the table, and then being willing to leave, and then obviously collective bargaining in terms of collaborating. And then also, you know, it helps if there's some discomfort or some pain there too. The other thing that I'd really like to cover as we wrap up too is, how can other workers or employees apply this in their own fields?
I'll just tell you what I did when I was on the business side of working in hospitals. So my first job out of college, I was an intern making $12 an hour. So peanuts. And I was living in Los Angeles. So
it was
unsustainable.
Jeez.
They were paying for my apartment, which was amazing, but it was a 10-week temporary internship.
Right.
When I was then asked to come on full time as the financial analyst, the woman who would be my boss said, we'll pay you $60,000. and I just about fell out of my chair. I had never even fathomed that kind of money.
No.
So I accepted on the spot.
And when, in what time period are we talking about that?
This was what 2007. So about 17 years ago now.
Okay.
And I, now, if I look back, it's like, you should have negotiated. You should have known what, taken the time to think about it. Know what the range is.
Right.
I accepted on the spot.
Right.
Because compared to what I was making,
right,
it was an ungodly amount.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I can often relate when I talk with doctors or other medical professionals about getting out of school or training, and they're offering you way more than you were making. So how could you not accept? How could you not just, you know, blindly take? I get it. I did it myself, but I also made up for lost time.
Right.
And here's how I did it.
Okay.
First and foremost, I always had my resume fresh.
Yeah.
So there was never a time that if I was ready for an opportunity that I didn't have my resources ready to go.
Okay. So a fresh resume.
Fresh resume. I also, for those who are not in medicine,
right,
I always kept track of my stats. Okay. So if I helped improve costs, lower expenses, improve satisfaction, I tracked those things.
You tracked those?
I did. Okay. So when I worked on the operations side,
right,
I would track, hey, how much expenses did we lower for the hospital?
Gotcha.
Because that could then be turned into, oh, hey, it's easy for me to ask for a 5% bump because I've saved the hospital nearly $1 million in supply expense or something like that.
Nice. Absolutely.
So for the business folks, I would say if you can track your impact on the business financially, that's another way to have some leverage in those conversations.
Right.
I always kind of follow the same script, and I do this exactly the same way with doctors. But in my own career, I did exactly this. When I felt like I was at the point where in about 9 months, I wanted to start to be ready for that change, I would begin to start to look at the market and find out, okay, who's looking for someone like me? What's the salary range for that? And where are they?
Yeah.
I live in Denver, so I wasn't really keen on moving just anywhere in the country. So I wanted to be a little bit picky about that. When an opportunity came up in an area that I would move to, that's where I say, okay, now I have an opportunity that I would accept if it was offered to me. Now I've got to go get the offer. Once I go get that offer, I come back to my employer and say, hey, I love it here. I want to stay, but I can't justify to my family turning down this offer for this promotion and, you know, the salary raise and all of these perks. Is there anything you can do to help it make it easy for me to turn this down and stay here?
Nice. Yeah.
Phrasing it that way, and that's just, you know, my language. I'm sure there's 1,000 other ways to say that and effectively. But what I wanted to get across was, I don't want to leave.
Right.
I want to stay here. And most doctors, I imagine healthcare professionals of other disciplines feel the same way.
Right.
I want to stay where I am. I don't want to change.
Or start over, for lack of a
better. I don't want to start over. Exactly. Yeah. That is, even the thought of that, you're thinking about all the things that could go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us say the devil you know.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So,
and that's absolutely true.
I completely understand how difficult the idea of change is. But in order for you to get what you deserve, you have to understand the economics of it. I, as an employer, when I was on the hospital side and Dr. Smith came in for the third time this year complaining about the fact that Dr. Jones, that's just got the newest piece of equipment, I knew if I just talked to him in a certain tone of voice,
yep,
and just tell him how much we appreciate him,
yep,
and how much his patients do, he'll go back to his clinic.
Yeah.
So hospitals executives know that doctors are here for the patients, and they will exploit that. And my job, in a respectful, compassionate, and empathetic way, is to help level the playing field so that doctors can say, I want to honor my patients by bringing the best version of myself to work every day.
Love that. Love that. And to me, that's the end. That's the most important thing, is being somewhere where you're valued and that empowers you to be a better version of yourself.
Yes.
And I think that's true of everything, of a job or a career or a profession or a relationship or assets and other things like that. I really do think it makes a big difference. And I have a whiteboard in my office where I take my clients through an exercise, and we go through the things in their life and see if those things are sources of empowerment or sources of negativity. You know, is this helping you or is it hurting you? And if it's hurting you, why won't you give it up? So we definitely do that. And as we end, I'll say this one thing that I always tell my clients, regardless of their employment situation, whether they have been laid off. And in my case, if I have clients who get laid off, I'll actually do what I can to help them find a new job. I really do, because I want to see them flourish. But one of the big things that I tell people is, whether you're trying to lose weight or whether you're trying to reduce your anxiety or be less depressed or be more motivated or more driven, or, you know, less exhausted or less tired, is be proactive. And one of the things that I tell all of my clients who are working is this, and it's not something that I created. It's just something that I've learned from talking to a lot of professionals. Create the job and the salary that you want. And when I say that, what I mean is that most employers aren't going to limit you being diverse and doing more than what they've asked you to do. And so, and I kind of learned that when I was, you know, when I was a kid, when I would go above and beyond. I remember one of my first jobs, I worked at this store called, I still remember the employee handbook, and the CEO. I don't know why I remember that, but I do. But I remember the store manager at this place called Designs in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Her name was Lisa, and she was a great manager. Loved her to death. But I remember I got stuck with doing all the vacuuming anytime I closed the store. And this is when I was in high school. I was 16, because I did such a good job. And the reason why is because we had a home, and part of our job as kids, and we had a fairly nice home, and we had to clean up. You know, we had to vacuum and things like that, and we had to do it pretty well. And so I took the same pride that I did with doing a good job at home at work. And that was noticed. And because of that, I always got stuck with vacuuming. But one of the things that I learned from that experience and other experiences is that if you volunteer to take on more things, it would be rewarded. And you'd be compensated one way or another. And I always tell my clients, whatever it is you want, give it first, then ask for it later. And so if you want a raise from your employer and you know what they're going to expect or what they're going to want from that raise, where they're going to say, well, you know, you don't generate enough revenue. Okay, well, you know, here's what. I spearheaded 3 projects that generated this much revenue. Okay, well, you're not as versatile as this other employee. Oh, well, you know what? I agreed to sit on 3 committees and I used the data from those committees to empower this department. And because of that, revenue's gone up. And so I always tell people, don't sit around and wait for stuff to happen. Don't just ask for stuff to happen. Make it happen first, then get the compensation that matches. Be proactive.
Yeah, exactly. And if you wait for things to happen, it just won't.
They never happen.
Proactive. And that is just such an important idea, when not just in caring for patients, but also caring for yourself. It's not going to happen by osmosis. It's not going to happen from your boss. You have to proactively seek out someone like you to say, I'm in pain, I need help. Or what's more likely is you're suffering in silence and nobody knows but you that you need help.
Absolutely. And, you know, and the other, you know, for me, the other closely tied concept is moving beyond comfort zones. You don't have to have life to push you beyond your comfort zones. Don't wait around for life to push you beyond your comfort zones. Be willing to grow and become more resilient and more persistent and more determined and more perseverant on your own. And the thing about it is, when you do that, that puts you in a place where you've got all the things that you need in order to get the courage and the bravery to leave anyway. because you've proven that you can grow something by yourself.
What I also don't want to under, I want to make sure that this gets the amplification it deserves, is having people like you on their team who can say, hey, Dr. Jones, super emotional situation. Here's three things that you need to be careful of through this process. I think that so often we're accustomed, doctors, lawyers, other medical professionals, we're accustomed to being problem solvers, self-sufficient. We find a workaround for things.
Right.
And I bet you there are doctors who have workarounds for all of these things that are completely draining their battery.
Yeah, that's true.
And one phone call, one email to you, someone who says, I understand what you're going through. There's better for you. It's like a life raft while you're in the middle of an ocean.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, I would like to close out. This has been such a treat for everybody who's listening. Definitely, I'm going to give you, or where he's going to give you all the information, but definitely, you know, jot this stuff down, because the thing about it is these strategies apply to everything in life. They don't just apply to work and your career. They apply to your relationships too. Be proactive in your relationship. Be proactive in your diet. Be proactive in your lifestyle. Be proactive in your extracurricular activities. Be proactive in your spirituality and your faith. Be proactive. Grow. Because when you grow in one area, that's going to magnify to every other area. And the other thing is, when you grow in one area in your life, that gives you room to grow and rest in those other areas. So it has been such a treat to have you today. This has been an incredible session. It's been an incredible, incredible learning experience for me and for the audience. So let's end by you sharing all the different places where people can find you online and get your expertise in terms of them being fully valued and compensated for their work and skill sets.
We share a ton of insights on our Instagram.
Okay.
At physician agency.
Okay.
And then we also are beginning to really get a lot of our education put into bite-sized clips for doctors on our YouTube page, which is the Doctor's Agent on YouTube.
Okay.
So those are the best places.
Okay. So on Instagram, it's physician agency.
Correct.
And then on YouTube, it's what?
The Doctor's Agent.
Doctor's Agent.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. And tell me, are you currently taking clients right now? Are you accepting
new clients? We are. Right, yeah, we currently have space for about three clients who would come on. We are quite full, but I think for three of the right clients, we would have space at this point.
Awesome. And the name of your firm is Rocky Mountain Physician Agency. Is that correct?
You got it.
Awesome. Well, hey, it's been such a treat to have you today. And I will absolutely follow up about having you to speak in one form or another to some of the local physicians here in Atlanta. I think you would be a really good treat. And I think it would make a big difference in people's lives. And with that, I'd like to wrap up. Hey, thank you so much for being a guest today. I look forward to continuing to communicate with you about helping people become empowered in their profession, in their workplace, and in their jobs.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. David.
Awesome. Thanks so much. And you guys stay tuned for the next episode, and I will see you on the other side. You take care. Bye-bye.